Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 5th of October 2014. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Johnny Fox, Web Cowgirl, Phil from West End Whingers, and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about next fall at the Southwark Playhouse. This is a 2009 play by Geoffrey Norths and is directed by Luke Shepherd. It opened in 2009 off Broadway in New York and then transferred to the Helen Hayes Theatre in 2010. Where it was produced by Elton John and David Furnish, apparently. It's a play that talks about the relationship between two gay men, Adam and Luke. They have a fairly long-term relationship, much to the surprise of Adam, who has a tendency to sabotage his relationships. But there is a problem at the centre of their relationship, which is that Luke is devoutly Christian, and Adam is a bit of an atheist, although it says atheist in the sort of the plot, but it comes across more of an agnostic, I think, in the play. Unfortunately, Luke is involved in an accident and is in hospital, and much of this play takes place in a waiting room while they're waiting for news of how Luke is doing, and with flashbacks to the story of Adam and Luke's relationship. John, what did you think about this play, and tell me more?
Before I knew I had to go to it, I was thinking, oh, Jesus, not another gay play. And then, of course, when I get there, I discover that Jesus plays a very large part in it, which is sort of refreshing because it at least takes us down a different angle. You might not like the way that this ends up as a very pro and anti-religious faithfulness argument, but it is a different feature in what might otherwise have been just another kind of odd couple gay comedy. The odd couple at the centre of the comedy, Adam and Luke. You mentioned that Adam might be either atheist or agnostic, but according to the script, he's Jewish, and he's meant to be one of these kind of wisecracking, smart-ass, know-it-all Jewish characters that you might find in a Neil Simon comedy, but also, you know, with gay sensibility and no ambition, which is a curious blend of characteristics. And I think the complexities of the character as written somewhat defeated Charlie Condu playing him. He is not enough of all these things, to my taste, to make him the sort of central person with whom you might try to identify. I think there's better success in Martin Delaney, who plays the guy who has the accident, Luke. He has a very, very good North Florida accent. I don't know quite where the dialogue coaching came from, but both he and his parental characters do this very well indeed. And he's both more physically and personally engaging. He's a little bit puppyish, and he has more interesting storylines. He had been a law student in Florida and then dropped out of that, facing a big battle with his parents because he wanted to be an actor. And then the second battle that he can't face with his parents is that, having decided to come to New York and to be an actor, both of which are things that they don't necessarily sympathise with, he now needs to deal with the fact that they wouldn't sympathise with him for being gay. The way in which it's staged, it's a very good set, actually, that has to deal with being both somebody's apartment and the hospital waiting area. I think for the very compact space of the little at Southwark Playhouse, it's extremely well designed. And the stage is populated by not just the people who are waiting outside the hospital room, but, you know, a couple of hangers-on as well, that I didn't quite understand what they were there for. There's a young man who walks around with a Bible all the time, and I wasn't sure if he was meant to be the hospital chaplain or was actually a friend of the character in the hospital room, which I think he might be, but very lightly drawn and very unexplored. But the two characters that I think come over best don't necessarily come out of the work of the script, but they may come out of the work of the actresses. And the first one is Sirin Saba, who plays Holly, Adam's long-term supportive friend and his boss at the candle shop where he works. I mean, he's got to be 40, and the only thing he's ever done that's remotely constructive is sold a few scented candles. She has a great combination of a very expressive face and a thoughtfulness that somehow imbues the lines with more meaning than they actually have on the page. So you do get the impression that she's a living, breathing, emotionally grounded woman, whereas the text and what I've read of reviews of the play when it was in America were that this was a part you could do nothing with because she's just described as a kind of cakeaholic overeater and a bit of a loser herself. So either somehow they've changed it in direction, or she has just found in the text something very much more, because she is the warmest of the characters and the one that you are happy for this rather dismal Adam, that he's got someone as strong and as capable as her to rely on, because he's clearly someone who falls apart fairly readily on his own. But the star of the show and the person who steals every scene in which she's in, and the one that you wish she'd just never leave the stage, is Nancy Crane playing Arlene, Luke's somewhat wayward mother. First of all, you think she's just a straight-laced, Bible-bashing, Bible-belt Florida housewife. You know, a little bit like Michael Tolliver's mother in Tales of the City. And I think there are lots of parallels between Tales of the City and how Michael goes to San Francisco and finds himself, and the same way that Jeffrey Nowitz has made Luke leave the same patch of rural Florida to come to New York and discover his real self. But Arlene has more to her than that. She and Luke's very bigoted father are separated, not because of any tension between them, but because she has had a bit of a pill-popping habit and clearly is a woman with a past, which you really want to know more about. And I'm particularly agog to hear more of her experience in one of the anecdotes she tells of the one-armed beautician from Shreveport. Just so much is contained in that line that gives revelation to the character. And Nancy Crane just feeds on it. She is tremendous. And whether it's just the subtle sharpness of her comic timing or the emotional suddenness with which she can casually pivot the balance of the piece, she really is the best actor in the show and also has some great lines. But perhaps because she is such an interesting character who has flaws of her own, it then makes you question the plot structure and why Luke failed to come out to a woman who you might consider could be at least understanding, if not actually supportive of his sexuality, because she's got, you know, faults and flaws of her own. There are some other inconsistencies in the plot. There's a great tale about harvesting organs for donation, and I sat next to someone who is both a critic and a nurse, and he was filling my ear during the interval of why they got this and completely wrong, although that may just be a difference between British and American methodologies. But I don't think you harvest organs from people who aren't actually hooked up to drips and breathing machines and things like that. So that could be something that hasn't been quite well enough researched, as I think quite a lot of the play is. So there are some very good performances. It looks nice. There are lots of laughs in it, although the audience didn't laugh as openly as I thought they should, or as I did myself. I went to the second press night, and a lot of the audience was what I think might be fairly kind of city and business-based gay couples, not the kind of very casual gay men that you might see at a campy musical or something above the Stag or somewhere like that. But it felt a slightly different kind of audience, a bit of a sort, lots of, as I said, very coupled and a little bit formal, I think is the word. But they weren't kicking back and relaxing, and they weren't enjoying it like you might enjoy My Night with Reg, which also has parallels with Next Fall. My Night with Reg is exemplary. But I thought there were moments when you could have the same feeling in Next Fall, that really quite a clever comedy has been made from some very sad situations. So I would recommend it. It's well worth a look.
Yeah, I enjoyed it for what it was, but I did have far too many questions about it. Things like, as you said, some of the other characters, I mean, Holly and the mother were... I mean, Holly certainly, I felt, was underwritten, as was the Bible-toting young man who we never quite find out who he is. I mean, I'm fairly sure he's an old college friend of Luke's, who he's supposed to be, but we don't really get that. And there's also a hint at Holly and him forming some kind of relationship in the play, which I didn't think was properly there, and they've kind of added it in or suggested it. Serene Sabat actually is an actress I've known about for quite some time. She tends to get secondary roles, but doesn't often get an opportunity to act in the kind of role where she tends to be on the stage, where she just has to move a lot rather than do a lot of talking. So it was nice to see her do something where she gets to act and show that she's actually very good. The other person we haven't mentioned, I think, is Mitchell Mullen, who plays the bigoted father. I mean, I mention him not because he was particularly great in this. I mean, he was good. I mean, everybody, I think, was pretty good in this production. But it's worth mentioning him because of his performance earlier this year in Superior Donuts in the same mm-hmm. place. He was very good in that. And when I saw him in the cast, I was looking forward to a really good performance. But I don't think it was strong enough. I mean, there's this idea that the idea of the title of this play is that Luke is going to come out to his stepbrother first, and his stepbrother is starting college, so he can't do it until next fall, until his stepbrother is well established in college and can cope with it. And I felt that actually there's quite a lot of this play where things are being put off to next fall. You know, the whole idea of having a fundamentalist Christian and an atheist, they're not really, it doesn't really get into it. You don't get proper debates. Nobody seems to up to a proper debate about it, or it doesn't seem to come down on one side or the other, although I think everybody seems to pick up the Bible in the end, even Adam. And also they're putting things off. They're putting things, the big confrontation with the father, which would have been very interesting. So there's a lot of kind of extremely interesting stuff which is being put off here, and in some ways it is being cut off here, because we don't really want to give away the ending, but I think we already have. So it's a fascinating piece of work, and I enjoyed it, but I don't know that I thought it was as good as it seems to have been rated on Broadway. Maybe it's just the production. So Webcow Girl, what did you think about this play?
I thought that this play is the kind that gives me, and should give anybody, great hopes as to the ability to get a play produced if this is the kind of play that in America is being nominated for a Tony. I thought it was basically B-level, mostly ultimately disposable playwriting. It selected a hot topic that it wanted to deal with. It had a bunch of characters come on and march through the things that maybe that they had to say. But it failed to ultimately get at the depth of what it was covering. So part of this play is about coming out. But to me, a great deal more of this play is actually about the conflict of religion and homosexuality in America. And I found the scenes in which Adam and Luke were talking about their relationship and their how God was affecting things with them, and how Luke's relationship with God was affecting his relationship with Adam. I thought those bits verged towards excellence, because this isn't actually the kind of thing I've really seen people cover in theater. And it's a topic that is particularly of interest in terms of a same-sex couple. But a relationship in which one member of a couple is really religious and the other one isn't, or in which, you know, religion is tearing them apart, to me, I think actually it was quite interesting. And the discussions that they had, you know, about how it all fits in their life was very interesting to me. But it didn't get as deep as I think it really could have. What it did manage to do that was utterly beautiful was show two men in a loving, supportive relationship that in some ways would be exactly the slap in the face of the heterosexual monogamous Christian establishment, because watching the two of them like wrestling with each other and just being a couple was actually really heartwarming, and it was very naturalistic, and I thought it was written really smoothly, and I was really able to believe in Adam and Luke as a couple. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to believe a lot of the rest of the play. I couldn't believe that Adam would be as rude and disrespectful as he was to Luke's parents. Admittedly, he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, but in America, I can't imagine somebody in a hospital setting telling a believer that I would wipe my bum with the pages from your holy book, because I think we've been brought up to be a little bit more respectful of differences in people's beliefs than that. And it was just unnecessarily rude, and I found it difficult to believe. Of all the characters, the ones that I did love the most were Arlene and Butch. Mitchell Mullen as Butch was completely believable as a homophobic conservative Southerner. And the reason why he was believable was because he was well-rounded. He wasn't a cardboard cutout. People come to these decisions about their beliefs after having, you know, quite a bit of thought about them over decades. And Mullen captured all of that in his character. Arlene was definitely a fun character, and Nancy Crane mostly had me, but unfortunately there was a scene where she burst into tears that it just kind of had the wrong tone for me. It just felt like an actressy moment and not really as natural as it should have been, like not the right degree of grief for what she was dealing with. And I think Serene Saba struggled with being a character who was supposed to be providing a lot of comic relief, but was actually in a situation where I wasn't really finding a lot of comedy. I saw her character, Holly, basically going to her very long-term friend, Adam, and pretty constantly just telling him to shut up when they're in the hospital together. And I think as the supportive friend, this wasn't really going to be how she was treating them. So I found that the character wasn't really written in a believable way, which is unfortunate. And ultimately, the way that the show all came together, while there were some snappy, funny lines, it wasn't really a comedy at all. It was really a quite deep examination of some very difficult topics. And I think it was almost being treated in a Neil Simon type way. And while the audience the night that I saw it seemed to lap it up and talk about how wonderful and how genius it was, I believe in 5 years, this play is going to be on the route to very quickly being forgotten. And I hope that some more people will look at the topics that it was bringing up and try to treat them in, you know, an appropriately theatrical fashion. But unfortunately, I find this speaks poorly about the new plays that were out on Broadway if this was nominated for a Tony.
We're now going to talk about Speed the Plough at the Playhouse Theatre. This is David Mamet's 1980s play, directed here by Lindsay Posner. It has gained notoriety because Lindsay Posner has, like a gallant knight of old, decided to possibly rescue Lindsay Lohan's career by giving her this part and giving her this opportunity. It did sound like that in a recent interview. It's probably not true at all. But he's cast Lindsay Lohan as Karen, the temp secretary who stages a bit of a takeover in this play, together with Richard Schiff playing Bobby Gould and Nigel Lindsay playing Charlie Fox. This is a play I've actually seen now 4 times, starting with the National Theatre production directed by Gregory Mosher with Colin Stinton, Alfred Molyneux and Rebecca Pidgeon. The best one I've seen was a production at the Ambassadors with Patrick Marber, Mark Strong and Kimberly Williams, which was directed by Peter Gill. Of course, most people's minds will be the production 6 years ago at the Old Vic with Kevin Spacey, Jeff Goldblum and Laura Michelle Kelly. So, Phil, what do you think about this production?
Well, I don't know if it's brave of Lindsay Posner or if it's a completely cynical thing by the producers to get some column inches and therefore a lot of publicity, which they've succeeded in doing, which is sort of ironic, really, because the play is sort of about a commercial versus art kind of argument because of what Lindsay Lohan's character, Karen, does in the play by trying to persuade a Hollywood producer to kind of drop a surefire commercial hit for a piece of pretentious drivel. But obviously the thing that everybody wants to know is she any good? And as it's, you know, emerged from pretty generally from the critics that actually she's not at all bad. In fact, I thought she was pretty good. And what she does give to this production is a real frisson, certainly during the previews when you weren't sure whether she was going to make it through it without a prompt. And when I saw it on Monday night, she had one prompt, which I thought was possibly a bit... The prompt came in really quickly, and I don't know that she really needed it. And I know she said in an interview on the opening night she didn't think she needed the prompt. I think she probably read what I wrote. But anyway, she's got, as I have to this morning, quite an appealing rasp in her voice. And she's sort of...
I wonder if it's for the same cause.
Yeah. And she... there's something about her vulnerability, I suppose, in the fact you think there's so much riding on this for her. And, you know, everybody's looking at her. When she's on stage, you are looking at her, which does perhaps sort of imbalance the production slightly. But I thought, you know, she was well cast. She's an, you know, she's playing a nervous sort of temporary secretary. And, you know, she certainly appeared nervous to me. But I think that might have been her acting. I don't know. She's certainly not disgraced herself. And I think she's got a huge amount of balls to do it. It doesn't, as a production as a whole, it doesn't live up to the brilliant Kevin Spacey and Jeff Goldblum, who were absolutely magnetic when they did. And I don't think either Richard Schiff, who actually I thought was very good, or Robert Lindsay, Nigel Lindsay, sorry, I don't think they're really up to that in the, with the rat-a-tat sort of overlapping dialogue. But they'll probably speed up on that. And it will, I mean, it's pretty fast production anyway. So for me, the night I went, it was an hour and 35 minutes, including the interval. They didn't need the interval. I think that kind of hampered it slightly. But on the whole, you know, I thought she kind of nailed the part. How about you, John?
Well, I have to confess that I was a bit of a Lindsay Lohan virgin. It must have just been a terrible accident that I have never been exposed to any of her work, either her early Disney stuff or her later tabloid notoriety. Again, when I knew I was going to go to this, I wasn't sure if she was a pop star or an actress. I really knew so little about her. So I must be one of the few critics to approach it with a completely open mind. Equally, I hadn't even seen the earlier productions of the play that you've talked about, in which allegedly, you know, Kevin Spacey was excellent, or on Broadway, Madonna was absolutely stinking. So it was a new play to me, and two of the actors I'd never seen perform. So it came... My initial impression was that it was perfectly well staged. There was nothing remarkably good or remarkably bad about it. I thought Nigel Lindsay as the junior of the two movie mogul executives was terrific. And I really began to be slightly annoyed with Lindsay Posner that he couldn't get that degree of energy, that degree of attack, that degree of confidence in the lines and the material across to the other two performers. But I blamed the other two performers more or less equally, because I had no idea that Lindsay Lohan was more or less vulnerable as an actress than anybody else who might have been cast in the part. I think the way that the play is structured is a great setup for someone arriving in that role, because in the first scene you've got Richard Schiff and Nigel Lindsay blustering about the movie business and discussing a kind of macho prison movie they might green light, with the same kind of sparky dialogue and attack that reminded me of the scenes in Death of a Salesman where Willie Loman and his friends are blustering about business, but also with a nicely satirical edge about the movie industry or the television making industry that you know. One of my favourite TV programmes is the BBC's Episodes, set in a production studio in California. And, you know, combine that. And they're barking commands at this obviously ditzy, obviously useless temporary secretary through the intercom, so that when she arrives on stage without the coffee they ordered, you're really expecting Lucille Ball. So it's a great build-up. And then all you get is this perfectly pretty, perfectly nice, perfectly audible actress with long red hair and riven cheekbones that make her look a bit more model than secretary. But she was completely audible and she was on top of the part, and we were just thinking, well, you know, what is all the fuss about? You know, there had been rumours that she'd play it like a finale of The Generation Game by reading the lines off the props. I mean, that's not only greatly exaggerated because she was on top of the lines, but also extraordinarily sexist, because I think it's It's Richard Schiff, the actor from The West Wing, who was the most unsteady in the lines. Now, that may be because he has most of them to say, and it's the biggest part. But also, it was for him that the previous Saturday's matinee was held 30 minutes so that an understudy could be saddled up. And he was announced as sick, but I also noticed from his Twitter feed that he'd been tweeting that he'd stayed up late to watch a baseball game. And frankly, in his inability to grasp the part, I think he made Lindsay Lohan look quite professional by comparison. The other thing I want to say about her is I think she must be an absolute delight to act with because she looks directly at the other characters when addressing them. Now, first of all, that adds a great deal of authenticity to her interpretation of the purposeful and possibly wily Karen, because you're never quite sure whether she's guileless or whether she's really a plant who's been sent into the studio to sort of disrupt things. But it also resists the theatrical convention of just cheating your face slightly more to the audience, which is, I guess, it's really charming. I mean, I think it's just inexperience on the conventional stage rather than direction that has made her do that. But it also suggested to me that she had no kind of starry vanity about her that made her want to kind of glance at the audience and see how they were reacting. Now, where perhaps it didn't go quite so well for me is in what everyone calls a soggy middle of the play, and that's the scene between Lindsay Lohan's character and Richard Schiff's character, where he's invited her to his apartment in the hope that he'll win the bet with Nigel Lindsay that he can sleep with her. And she's come to the apartment, theoretically, to give him a reading of a treatment for a book that she's read, which is, by everybody's measure, going to make a hopeless film. So he's only indulging her because he thinks he can sleep with her, and she's possibly only giving him the idea that she'll sleep with him so that he'll greenlight her idea. It's unclear from this production, and from my unfamiliarity with any others, whether David Mamet intends you to believe that the nonsensical book that she's protecting and projecting all about how microwaves damage our brains and this might be some kind of doomsday deliberate plot, whether that book is intended to have any merit at all, or whether it's just something that's a joke and can be dismissed like, you know, reading the play script of Springtime for Hitler. You know, they found the most dreadful film or play they could make. If it's meant to have some merit, then she's not doing a very good job, because when she reads from the book or she talks about the book, it just sounds like gobbledygook. But if it's meant to be a joke that this thing should have any consideration, then she's doing it very well. So I don't know, because I don't know the play well enough, whether or not that's good or bad. Maybe one of you can speak about whether you think that's right or not. But, you know, a few faltering moments. I also saw the last preview before press night. Those things aside, it looks a decent production. It's not the best thing you'll ever go and see. I don't think it will sell out, because I think the people who might want to subscribe to go and see Lindsay Lohan because either they're fans of hers or because they're hoping for a car crash or some kind of drama that isn't contained in the play, I don't think they're the kinds of people who'll tip up 50 or 60 quid to go and see a David Mamet play at the Playhouse. So I think that it might be well discounted and, you know, on half price on the booth or something like that. I think it'd make a very enjoyable evening. I would recommend people went to see it.
With regard to the book, yeah, I do agree. I mean, the book is so absurd and does sound so absurd. You think this can't possibly be, this has to be a joke. And I think the thing is that they put pictures of her when she was fluffing her lines at the first preview of her apparently reading the script. Well, she is meant to be reading from the book when she's doing it. So I think that's kind of a bit unfair. And actually, Richard Schiff was on top of it when I saw it on Monday night. And I believe he missed both performances on Saturday, didn't he, Tim?
Yes, he did, because I saw it on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, so and with a guy reading from the script then?
No.
Oh, he wasn't...
Adam Morris, who took over, he was word perfect on the night, and not only word perfect, but he looked as if he'd acted, and he was really acting. He was actually incredibly impressive as because he knew his lines and he hadn't had any rehearsal, so it was quite a good, you know, understudy role. And I think anybody who saw him that night, especially if they're going to be making a note of him, because I mean he's he's had his thing of fame before, because under a different name, and when he was Wayne, I think it's Wayne Morris, he acted as Robin in Maid Marian and Her Merry Men. So he was coming in as an understudy and was very impressive on that night.
It's funny, because everybody said about the soggy middle scene, which when I saw it with Spacey and Goldblum, and I thought Goldblum, both of them were excellent, but I thought Goldblum was absolutely magnetic on stage. That scene was the weakest in the play then. I didn't really feel it was the weakest now, because actually I found watching Lindsay Lohan, I found really magnetic and sort of, you know, I couldn't take my eyes off her in a way, which was a bit distracting. I suppose probably there was a bit of me watching her to see if she was going to screw up, and but you could hear a pin drop in there, and maybe that's because people were listening to hear any prompts or something. But, you know, I found the whole will she, won't she thing gave quite a frisson to it. But I do agree with what John said, is that if people are going to see her or going to see a car crash, they're going to be disappointed. Maybe they're not going to go now, because actually she's done so well.
I mean, I have to say, if I'm going back through the list of people who fluffed their lines, the one for me that stands out is Sheila Hancock, who, even when I first saw her, was a very experienced actress, you know, even though it's a long time ago. But I think the first three productions I saw her in, she fluffed her lines every single time. Very experienced actress. I mean, even then, she was a very experienced actress. And, of course, there's famously Ken Stott, who I think in the play The Faith Healer almost had a meltdown. He forgot his lines so much, he just couldn't, you know, they just weren't there. And it was immensely frustrating. So, yeah, fluff lines happen, and especially when she's got all this sort of publicity and expectation, I wouldn't be surprised. I think she was very relaxed when I saw her on Saturday, because she didn't have there was somebody else feeling all the pressure. And from what it sounds, I might have got a better deal, because I don't think Richard Schiff has really stood up to it as much as other people. I mean, it is a fascinating play, because the thing about the Bobby Gould character, I think, is that he's sort of reflective. You know, everybody talks at him, and he just, a lot of the time, he agrees, and you don't really see what's going on behind his face. And you do need a particular kind of actor to do that. And I'm wondering if perhaps Richard Schiff wasn't quite the right person for it. I mean, from what I've read in the reviews, of course, because I didn't actually see him. The character of Karen is an interesting one, because I did think this time, I was a little bit reminded of Oleana, another David Mamet play, pretty much because you have this sort of woman who is, at first, seems extremely dim and not quite there and not quite together, but who sort of blossoms later in the play. In the case of Oleana, she becomes sort of vindictive and nasty, and everybody talks about how Oleana is a very misogynistic play. But also in this, Karen becomes this, sort of gains confidence in that in the soggy middle scene, and then becomes almost manipulative. You know, you see her coming in the next time as this rather business suited proto executive in the last scene. I mean, Lindsay Lohan, I thought, was fine in this. I really didn't want to get into all the hype and the rubbish, and I wouldn't have gone to see this play had it not been for the casting of Nigel Lindsay and Richard Schiff, because I thought, you know, definitely with Nigel Lindsay, who is an actor I'd like an awful lot, there was going to be something good in this play, and he certainly delivered on that. He was very good when I saw him. He's always a good actor. I mean, he is so reliable. You just, you know, it's a lesson for everybody. If you go and see a play and you notice Nigel Lindsay is in the cast, there is going to be something good in this play, and it's probably going to be him, because he is just, so, you know, he is such a good, reliable presence. And I think that has helped this play an awful lot, having him in there. The only slight problem I had with Lindsay Lohan was something that John's mentioned about her looking a bit like a model. And I did think she was a bit too Hollywood glamorous coming on, and just a little bit too much like a model, and not enough like a temp. Again, I go back to the one I consider the best, which is the 2000, the first production in 2000, because there was another one. They rejigged the first production to make a slightly less successful second one. But the one with Patrick Marlborough and Mark Strong, where you had Kimberly Williams, who again was an ingenue actress at the time, had had a few almost child roles in things like Father of the Bride. and she was very much of that sort of squeaky clean sort of Hollywood output, and she came over and delivered possibly the best Karen I've seen. On the films, the films, I don't think either of the films really have any merit at all, but I think that is the point. I mean, the prison drama sounds like a particularly awful thing, and I'm trying to work out who the big star is. I sort of felt in this one it was supposed to be Bruce Willis, but I think at the time it would have been Schwarzenegger or Stallone who come in, and of course both of them, well, certainly Schwarzenegger did a couple of prison movies where almost exactly this happened. I think there's a prison movie he did with, I think it's Patrick Swayze, that's almost exactly the plot of the film that they describe. We're now going to talk about Pitcairn at the Globe Theatre. This is a Chichester Festival Theatre production of Richard Bean's new play, yet another new play by Richard Bean, directed by Max Stafford Clarke. It concerns what happened to the crew of the mutinous crew of the Bounty, led by Fletcher Christian, who tried to establish a new society together with some Tahitian followers on the remote island of Pitcairn. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, he frames the play by two scenes where some British warships come looking for the mutinous crew to kind of capture them. And they find only one person left in Pitcairn, only one crew member left in Pitcairn, who's allegedly a nobody called Adams. And then in between, we get effectively the life of the crew once they got to Pitcairn with their Tahitian wives, because Pitcairn was unsettled. So they had mutinied and gone to Tahiti, and they took these Tahitian wives and went, I think, 1,300 miles to this tiny island of Pitcairn and set up this sort of new settlement, which was defined perhaps most by sexual promiscuity than anything else. And it just tells the story of their lives there, and initially idyllic, sort of on paradise, and it all goes hopelessly wrong when the men kind of move from consent to force, as it were. I think that it's a very good subject for a play. I didn't actually know that much about the whole sort of mutiny on the Bounty thing. And I do think it's actually a very good subject for a play. And actually, it should suit the Globe. The nature of the setting and the period and everything else should actually suit the Globe. But for me, it just didn't work. And I've been reflecting quite a lot, because I only saw it on Friday, as to why it didn't work. And I think it just doesn't have the depth. It just isn't substantial enough in narrative terms. And I think the production's just a bit too panto, to be honest. They break the fourth wall quite a lot, and that works occasionally because of his irreverent kind of witty style of writing anyway. But it doesn't work all the time because it tends to cheapen the play a bit. And it just, for me, just sort of didn't have the depth. There's nothing wrong with the performances. I quite liked the use of music. I quite liked the movement. I did think, you know, some of the lines are very witty, and I did like the sort of the cheekiness, if you like, of it, the irreverence of it. And it is quite sort of explicit in many ways. But it just didn't work as a play. And the only thing I kind of come to in thinking about it is that it just wasn't substantial enough and wasn't given a good enough production. I wondered a little bit whether we've come to expect a lot of Richard Bean, and therefore expectations are by definition high, and therefore, you know, it didn't live up to them. And I wondered, you know, if we just come across it by an unknown playwright, what we would have thought about it. But it is Richard Bean. That's the way it is. And it does not live up to anything like any of his other work for me. I think probably the weakest Richard Bean thing I've seen. And seeing it fairly soon after Toast, which is his first play revived, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not even as good as Toast, which was 10, 12, 14 years ago. So it was a big disappointment for me, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I thought it was a perfectly fun evening when I saw it, and very interesting. I'm certainly, he seems to have got his history about right in many ways. I think there's, yeah, we won't mention where he might have gone away from that. But the thing about him is that it's almost as if he seems to want to stick to the history as it is known, but very little is known, because there was only one male survivor And that's the only account we have of exactly what happened. And he may well be an unreliable narrator. So Richard Bean seems to have stuck to Mr. Adams' story, and he's not really played with it an awful lot. I mean, I think the two narrator characters that we get, which are two Tahitians, boy and young woman, are possibly the most fun to be had in this play. And they narrate it, and they take us through it, and they are, as you say, funny and cheeky. But they don't really expand on it, and there's not an awful lot to tell. It lacks imagination because he's telling a rather sparse story, but he's trying to tell it accurately, perhaps. And I think that's what kind of goes wrong here, that he's not really come up with something more interesting than what happened. And people, you know, people, when they tend to think about it, tend to think about the whole, you know, the lead up to the mutiny, not really what happened next. I mean, what happened next is the paragraph at the end of the page, and it is quite interesting, but it's not particularly fascinating. I mean, there are other pieces to it that are fascinating about the story. I mean, one of the most remarkable things about the whole mutiny on the Bounty is what Captain Bligh did. He was set adrift in a boat and sailed it about almost 4,000 miles. They did put to land a few times, but he sailed it 4,000 miles to safety and back to some form of civilization. And he didn't lose any of the people who stayed with him. I think about 14 people who stayed with him. He didn't lose any of them, but some of them died once he got sort of back to civilization. And that is, of course, a remarkable story. And it's one of the many remarkable stories about this. I don't think this is a remarkable enough story. I mean, it is interesting, but I'm not sure how you could really tell it better than it's been told before. There is something about this. I mean, it is a fascinating story, and it does make a good play, but as you say, we expect more from Richard Bean, and I don't think it's quite up to his usual standards.
I think you're right there. I think that it's the prelude, it's what happens before it that is really interesting. The mutiny, the motivation for the mutiny, the behaviour of Bligh that perhaps contributed to the mutiny, plus the immediate period where they sort of find this new life and all these Tahitian women. And after that, it just becomes, well, let's have sex, let's have more sex, let's have a lot more sex. And so after that, it is just a bit dull, really. And I think what he's staging is the dull bit. That sounds terrible, isn't it? But I think that's the reality, but that's the choice he made. And that's the play we end up with. So yes, a disappointment, but not, you know, there's, as I said, there's, you know, I, it's not one of those evenings where you think, oh, I wish I hadn't gone to that. It's just one of those evenings where you think, I wish I'd got more than I actually got. So it kind of falls into my worthy failure category than a sort of waste of my evening category, I think.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are ayultp.com. The podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.